The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we have His Excellency Rudolf Hekl, the Ambassador of the Czech Republic. Welcome, Ambassador. I think this is your first time to the grill.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. I certainly do follow your radio, but it's an opportunity, obviously, to have the chance to talk to you all. Listeners, and I'm looking forward very much to that.
So, obviously, you know, the Czech Republic, not one of the biggest trading partners for the Malaysians heretofore, I think. A small country, relatively speaking, about 10 and a half million people.
Right.
We don't do a lot of trade with each other. Presumably, that's why you're here talking to us to, I guess, galvanize relations between our two nations, trade wise, governance wise, policy wise, socially, even some tourism. Tell us why you're here, Ambassador.
Well, that's the same as the whole mission of embassies and ambassadors. We try to develop relations in the full spectrum of the relations which countries maintain, and it's no different with Malaysia. You mentioned our economic or trade ties. I must say that the situation is not that marginal, not that bad. We have fairly good trade. It averages over $1 billion U.S. dollars per year. Last year it was 1.1. This year it's going to grow up 20%. So it's not bad.
What kind of stuff do we do with each other?
Mostly it's electronics and computer-related products. And
so we send you widgets and you send us...
Yes, it's a dominant structure in both directions, electronics and computer-related things, as I mentioned. But Malaysia is exporting to the Czech Republic more. And it's a result of foreign direct investment, which you have in places like Penang. And we have also a lot of investment coming from countries like Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, and so on. So we are talking about the supplies which go in between the companies and are part of a global supply chain movements.
Well, okay. Well, obviously, you've been very busy in your role. You've been organizing a lot of delegations and a lot of trade groups to come through to Malaysia. You do a lot of stuff with green technology, manufacturing, food as well. What is the proposition? And what kind of end results are you looking for? Are you looking for investment into your country from Malaysia? Are you looking to sell more of your product in Malaysia? What kind of stuff are you looking for?
Well, by default, governments, they tend to support exports, helping their companies to penetrate foreign markets, which is also our role. And in the opposite direction, it's obviously we want to have more investment coming from overseas. But I have never taken this narrow view of government assistance. We try to engage in all sorts of meaningful activities which might be beneficial to the both sides. So in this respect, I think that the proposition which we are trying to make is that as a country which has traditionally been very industrial, we are might be to interest that the Czech Republic has the largest share of the industrial production out of all the European Union member countries. So we are manufacturing economy, traditionally very diversified one. We hope that we are very innovative and technologically based. So this is something what I see in this part of the world, including Malaysia, in high demand. In whatever direction, in whatever form it might take, this is something which makes sense. The big players, like I mentioned, the international or multinational corporations, they will find their way on their own. All they need is a proper framework, proper environment, proper setup. But we need to have a little bit more of interaction on the medium and small-sized companies where the government role is probably very meaningful and is very much welcome.
Well, I guess it's not surprising for you to be here along with other European ambassadors, ambassador, because obviously ASEAN and Asia is the growth market, is the big consumption economy going forward into the new century. And I presume European corporations, small and large, would want to have a bit of this pie. When I look at your manufacturing sectors, I think you point out that industrial production from the Czech Republic is one of the biggest in your continent. You've got stuff like aviation, transport, power, mechanical engineering, electronics, healthcare, pharmacy, chemical industries and technology and nanotechnology. Skoda is one of your biggest corporations, but they don't need any help from you, right? So it's the smaller players. What kind of stuff do they need? What kind of like incentives or market share are they looking to get into this region?
Well, talking about big companies like you mentioned, Skoda, I think their decision making is part of what they call concern or the group decision making. So they
because it's Volkswagen. So
that's a Volkswagen. Yeah. So they move in line with whatever the overall strategy is. As far as the other companies are concerned, like I mentioned, in the technology sectors, it could be energy, could be this broad spectrum of green technology things which have to do with water management, with even nanomaterials and things like that. They need first the business opportunities. They need partners. We are talking about still very distant markets, which are not mutually very much integrated. $1 billion is not bad, but it's just a marginal figure compared with our orientation, our exposure. We have about 80% of our trade, or even this year, it's going to go to 84 of our exports goes to the European Union market. So we are talking about fairly distant markets for a new environment. So they need a lot of information provision, a lot of facilitation, a lot of assurances. And at the end of the day, they need business opportunities. If the business opportunities are there, and you rightly pointed out that this is a growth area, growth market, whole of ASEAN, and Malaysia has been a remarkable development story for decades, then it needs a little bit of help, a little bit of courage, a little bit of intervention and follow through. And that's what we are trying to do as an embassy.
Ambassador, is your job very much more under pressure, I think, much more onerous now with the fact that there's a referendum back home about to take place? Because obviously there's a large contingent of people within your country that wants to leave the common market. And if that's the case, and if the referendum does go through and there is a Czechzit, as they say, yeah, a Czech exit from the European Union, then obviously the ASEAN markets become that much more important to you.
Well, I don't see the situation as acute or dramatic. As a matter of fact, there is no plan for a referendum on the participation of the Czech Republic or continued participation in the European project, European integration. Even the winning political movements or parties in the recent parliamentary elections, they did not undermine the commitment of the Czech Republic to its full membership in the European Union, so I don't think that there's going to happen. That said, I think that we belong to those countries which are very much interested in seeing the European Union evolve in a functional, realistic, closer to the people, and efficient in terms of all the freedoms of movements of all the factors which we have in the European Union in the future. That's something where obviously the public opinion plays an important role. People are very sensitively watching whatever initiative is coming from the Brussels, whatever the response comes from Brussels to the contingencies, which might not have necessarily only the economic nature. Could be the security and other considerations. So in this respect, I think that we are trying to be pragmatic and be realistic and focusing on the efficiencies and on the practical functioning of the integration.
Well, absolutely. But I want to refer you to a news article from The Star, I think, some years ago, conducted by the reporter Martin Vengadesan at the time. He said, and he quoted you as saying that when you were young, growing up at home, and when the Iron Curtain came down on communism in Europe, you said that before the curtain came down, there was public political discussion was off limits, and basically everything was a burden. But once it came down, you had freedoms, democracy, civil society, and spontaneity. People could influence and participate in the state of affairs. And I want to refer you to the current situation whereby you've got your president, Milos Zeman. He wants to go through with this a referendum on the country's membership of the European Union and NATO as well. And he points out, I think, to a Reuters April survey that a result saying that satisfaction with the EU membership was just at 25%, as in just one of four Czech people were satisfied with the membership, and that the referendum would allow everything for Czechs to have a referendum and to be able to express themselves. So very much a very similar state of mind when the Iron Curtain came down, when you were yourself growing up. So obviously this goes a little bit against the grain of what you just said. Can you shed some light on that for us?
Well, President Zeman, I must say, has been over the years, and this is not his first position in the kind of official job. He has been the prime minister in the past. He was also the speaker of the parliament. He was a sincere proponent of our membership of the European Union. And under his premiership, actually, the Czech Republic joined also NATO. It was in 1999. So I don't have any doubts about his commitment to the membership of the Czech Republic in all these very important economic and security institutions which define our position in not only in the area where we live geographically, which is the Central Europe, but also in terms of the international context, the Transatlantic League and so on.
So what's changed since then? Obviously, he's doing his job in terms of allowing a platform for people to express themselves, even though he may not, as you say, believe it himself. So what's changed since then?
Well, the quote which you used, and I came across that, I think that it has to be taken in the context. And my understanding of his interventions of this sort has been more of a pointing to the necessity to have, along the lines I described it before, rational orientation, rational functioning, and rational reform of European institutions. So that would be my understanding of his talks. As far as the second part of your question, which has to do more with the public opinion, if I understand it correctly, in the Czech Republic, and
quite simply, 3 out of 4 people in the Czech Republic don't agree with membership of the EU. And that's what an April survey from Reuters suggests.
I'd have to see exactly how the question was phrased and how the outcome came. But the truth is that people tend to respond to the events which are evolving in Europe. And you see that there were in the past developments which brought about quite dramatic electoral outcomes in other countries, not only in the Czech Republic. And what I have in mind in particular has been the whole, what we call the immigration crisis and the way it was handled. It certainly didn't, at least based by the opinions in the Czech Republic, didn't create a whole lot of confidence in the ability of the European institutions and, at the end of the day, all of us, because we are members of the European Union, but we are just one of still 28 members of the European Union, to handle the challenges, decisiveness and wisdom as it would probably require.
We are talking on the grill this morning to Rudolf Haeckel, the ambassador of the Czech Republic in Malaysia. After this, that is exactly what we're going to get into, Ambassador, immigration in Europe.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
This morning on the grill, we are talking to His Excellency Rudolf Haeckel, the ambassador of the Czech Republic in Malaysia. Now, you raised, I think quite aptly, immigration being one of the big social issues in Europe at this point in time. And I want to cite the fact that the three biggest advocates and supporters, I think, of Angela Merkel's open-door policy was, in fact, Germany, France and Sweden. And they've had a whole multitude of terror attacks in the years since then. Whereas the three countries which opposed immigration, which is Poland, Hungary and yourselves in the Czech Republic, have had no or little to none to no terror attacks in the years since then. So I guess there's a bit of a method to the madness here, don't you think, Ambassador?
Well, I hope it will stay that way, that we will be spared of any violence of this sort, as our colleagues have experienced in the past. I don't know whether that's the direct correlation between the immigration and the terrorist attacks.
It seems an easy line to draw.
Well, by the numbers, you might come to a conclusion that that's the probability how it works, because as we see, a lot of these attackers have been homegrown terrorists who were born in those countries. So you might come to that conclusion. But I'm not sure that the mechanism is as simple as it might seem. But that said, I must say that the whole concept of immigration and primarily illegal immigration has to be seen in the wider context. It's not only the issue of terrorism and increased terrorism, though it might appeal to the basic fears of population, and it can be probably politically harvested, as you can see it all over Europe and countries in our neighborhood in particular, but not only there. But it has to do also with the ability of countries to decide on the level of international exposure or level of the control over the mix and the coexistence of population and on different groups of population in their societies.
That accommodative approach is not necessarily happening in your home country of the Czech Republic, Ambassador, because it goes further than that. With President Miloš Zeman, he's warned in the past of a possible super Holocaust caused by immigrants, and he's actually possibly pushing through a constitutional change to allow citizens to use guns against terrorists if they think that police are delayed or unable to make their way to the scene of attack in time.
Well, the point I was trying to make is that the bottom line is that, and that's been constant position of my government, that it is not up to the foreign institutions, including supranational institutions, to mandate on the individual member countries the number and the fact itself. It's not about that much about number of people who are supposed to stay in the country, sometimes even against their own will. So we believe that we were supposed to have, as a country, as a sovereign country, in such a sensitive thing, much bigger say and leeway and the ultimate say on who ends up in the territory of the Czech Republic. And I must say one thing, because it might sound as a little bit misleading. Back in the 90s, when there was the civil wars in Yugoslavia, which led to the breakup of the country, we had at that point about 60,000 of refugees. 60,000 refugees for a small country of, as you mentioned at the beginning, 10 million people, coming primarily from places like Bosnia, which is a Muslim country. And that was really, really a situation where these people were chased out of their homes. They were supposed to survive, basically, in provisional arrangement. And after that danger disappeared, they returned back. So we didn't have any problems with that, and we are very helpful on this respect. But it's a different situation than what we are talking now, that we have a lot of people who are taking advantage of the systems, very generous ones, social ones, and taking the system to the limit, both in terms of the economic and social cohesion.
We are talking to His Excellency Rudolf Haeckel, the Ambassador of the Czech Republic in Malaysia. Now, that's exactly how the whole discussion started, because obviously membership of the European Union for yourselves, as well as the Polish and the Hungarians, are precisely at stake, because Brussels, or the European Commission, has launched a legal case in June this year to basically fine your three countries for not taking in more asylum seekers, more immigration. And you are holding steadfast to this policy, saying you will not take any more and you will be willing to either pay the fine or leave the union.
I don't think it's as dramatic. I think the government, which is now completing its term, as you're probably aware, we had parliamentary elections last month. So they maintain this position, and I don't see as of now any indication what the new government, provided it's forming any time soon, will come up with any dramatic changes. So that's the way we probably came to a political consensus at the time. And that's the way it is. Now, as far as the future of our membership in the European Union, I think that we have said it over and over again, and what I read in the program of the, at least the political movement which won in the elections last month, the decisive 30%, almost 30% gain, their orientation and their realization that the European Union is the place where we belong, and that we want to belong, and that we want to be part of the project, and we want to also influence the direction in which it's going, it will not change. So I doubt that the proposition which you made, that the immigration and the quotas would be something which would lead to our review of membership of something.
And yet, Ambassador, the people, yes, in the Czech Republic have voted in the equivalent of the Czech Donald Trump. His name is Andrea Babis. He runs a Eurosceptic political party called the ANO, which stands for Action of Dissatisfied Citizens. And what he stands for is, well, he's also the second wealthiest person in the country. He demands the return of greater sovereignty from the European Union. He rejects the euro. He's against Muslim immigration. And he's also won 30% of the vote, but the parliamentary elections, which is three times as many as its closest rival, in elections held October 20th. So obviously the people of the Czech Republic feel quite the opposite to how you feel, Ambassador.
Well, I'm trying to look at the program of and the way what I read the statements of ANO. That's the name of the movement. The truth is that the parallel which you made, Trump and Babish, is
well. That's not my quote. That's someone else's in the Western media specifically.
Doesn't matter. It simply to hold and then people keep on repeating, as you can see. Even
well, the thing is, Ambassador, there is a global wave of populism right now, and there's a global wave of leftist politics as well.
Yeah.
It's no coincidence. It's not just yourselves in the Czech Republic. It's also happening in France, in Italy, in America, even in the UK.
Okay, let me get back to you. I'll answer your question, let me get back to this parallel which you made, Trump and Babish. And I'm not here to judge about whether being compared with Trump has any kind of other connotation.
It's the feelings of the people, Ambassador.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say, and that's what I can as a civil servant coming from my country, I probably has more access to information. What I can say is that, quoting again Mr. Babish in this case, he calls himself or considers himself to be more of a pragmatic rather than populist, and that would be probably the implicit kind of characterization which one might take from your descriptions. Now, reading through the program of his movement and looking at the statements which he has made before and after the elections, I think that his concern is primarily about the efficiency of management of the government and about running the country, about having prudent economic policies, about being careful with the public resources. It has all sorts of expressions through the tax collections, through the saving of overhead, and maybe consolidating some of the government institutions, things like that. It has to do with the security. That's another thing. But it's not only the security in the sense of illegal immigration and things like that, but it has to do also with the increased spending on our defense, where we have certain obligations coming from our membership in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And it has to do with the investment both into the physical infrastructure and into the human capital, education, retirement pensions, the healthcare services, and so on. So I think that his proposition is quite substantive, and it's not just the shortcut which you have probably drawn from foreign media.
It's not a shortcut that I draw myself. It's a shortcut I draw from the media publications from Europe and North America. So it's not exactly my opinion. It's the opinion of the media establishment. But be that as it may, I'm afraid we've run out of time. Politics is, as always, is a multifaceted, multi-layered and complicated affair. So it is what it is, and we've got to take it as it comes. So, well, thank you, Ambassador, and good luck with your tenure ahead.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here.
We were talking to His Excellency Rudolf Haeckel, the Ambassador of the Embassy of the Czech Republic in Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.